This week, a severe remote code execution vulnerability is affecting the popular StackStorm automation software. CrowdFence is willing to pay $3 million for iOS and Android 0 days. Equifax is reported to be neglecting their cybersecurity priorities prior to the breach. Google launches a new cloud security service, and unprotected MongoDB instance has exposed 800 million emails and personal information. Jason Wood from Paladin Security joins us for expert commentary on how a researcher claims an Iranian APT is behind a 6 terabyte data heist at Citrix. All that and more on this episode of Hack Naked News.
This is Security Weekly. For security professionals, by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show that brings you the security news each week. And despite popular belief, we do wear pants. It's Hack Naked News. Are you worried about PCI compliance? Does your development team understand or care about security? Are you ready to face a breach of your customer's sensitive data? See the worst that can happen before it does. Black Hills Information Security can help you help management see the future. Email consulting at blackhillsinfosec.com to find out how a web application penetration test can mitigate the risk before you go live.
Welcome to Hack Naked News, episode 210 for March 12th, 2019. I'm your host, Paul Asadorian. We have a couple of announcements even. Join us April 1st through the 3rd at Disney's Contemporary Resort for InfoSec World 2019. We've got all kinds of fun stuff going on at InfoSec World. I'm co-presenting with Adrian Santabria. We're doing a marketing and sales seminar for security vendors for free. We're doing interviews and briefings. If you're interested in any of that or even attending, you want to attend? I got a discount code for you. OS19-SecWeek gets you 15% off the main conference or a world pass. And if you are interested in doing a paid interview or a free briefing with us, you can go to securityweekly.com/conference request. John Strand will be teaching active defense and cyber deception at Black Hat 2019. Please register now and register soon, because his classes typically sell out for Black Hat, and I completely and totally expect that this class may already be sold out. So hurry, go to blackhat.com and register for his class today, because John is one of the most talented instructors that I've ever met in my entire life. So how's that for a resounding endorsement? And now, for the security news this week, Facebook alleges that two Ukrainians scraped data from 63,000 profiles. Now, they're the two Ukrainians were the developers of an application that used the login with Facebook feature to allow users to sign in. It's a function that allows users to avoid creating brand new accounts for certain apps. When a user logs in with Facebook, and that's in quotes, logs in with Facebook, they're alerted that by doing so, they allow the app to access public profile information. However, the malicious apps in this case were thus actually designed to scrape the app user's public profiles on Facebook. What a way to get around Facebook's bot detection and scraping. The apps then took it a step further and eventually prompted the users to install malicious extensions in their browsers that manipulated the user's browsers to collect a raft of private and public social media data information when they visited Facebook. Now, don't believe for a second that what you put inside of Facebook or any social media network is private. This type of attack happens all the time as the social media giants struggle and sometimes, well, most of the time ignore the separation between good apps and bad apps or good users and bad users. A severe remote code execution vulnerability is affecting the popular StackStorm automation software. According to the expert, the flaw could be exploited by a remote attacker to trick developers into executing arbitrary commands on targeted services. StackStorm has been used to automate workflows in many industries. It allows developers to configure actions, workflows, and schedule tasks to perform some operations on large-scale servers. The vulnerability tied the way the StackStorm REST API improperly handled cores across origin resource sharing, of course, headers, eventually enabling web browsers to perform cross-domain requests on behalf of the authenticated developers. The "on behalf" here is the phrase that really resonated with me, as it underscores the challenges in a DevOps environment associated with tying multiple applications and processes together in an automated fashion. Vulnerability research hub CrowdFence is willing to pay $3 million for iOS or Android zero-day exploits. The vulnerability research firm is offering $3 million, that's right, $3 million for these particular exploits. CrowdFence ran a $10 million bug bounty program. Now the company decided to increment the value of the bug bounty program and extend them to other areas, including messengers, network devices, and Wi-Fi or baseband. It still begs the question, who funds these operations? I'll let you ponder that. While we talk about a serious Windows Zero Day flaw being actively exploited in the wild, always try to be on the latest version. Well, in this case, it will help, as this combines the operating system and a browser. So the flaw, which resides in Windows Win32k.sys kernel driver, gives attackers a means to break out of security sandboxes that Chrome and most other web browsers use to keep untrusted code from interacting with sensitive parts of the operating system. Attackers combined an exploit for this vulnerability with an exploit for CVE-2019-5786. Of course, everybody knows CVE-2019-5786, right? It's the use after free bug in Chrome's file reader component. I didn't have to tell you that. You knew that already. The Windows vulnerability is a null pointer dereference in win32k.sys. Win32k, MN get item from whatever, and all the details are there. When that system call is called under specific circumstances is when the exploit is triggered. The quote from the article says, "We strongly believe the vulnerability may be only be exploitable on Windows 7 due to recent exploit mitigations added in newer versions of Windows." As the people that found the exploit, they said, "To date, we've only observed active exploitation against Windows 7 32-bit systems. Time to move on up in the world and update your operating system," which is, of course, easier said than done. Equifax is found to be neglecting cybersecurity priorities, according to a Senate report. Now, Equifax is trying to defend itself. They're quoted as saying, "The fact that Equifax suffered a data breach does not mean the company did not have appropriate data security program or that the company failed to take cybersecurity seriously," says the company's current CEO, Max Begor, is what he told Congress. But the report said that the credit monitoring agency did not adhere to its own patching schedule and failed to locate and patch the Apache Struts vulnerability that led to the 2017 breach. The Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, of course, believes differently than the CEO, stating, "In addition, Equifax did not have basic tools in place to detect and identify changes to files, a protection that would have generated real-time alerts and detected the unauthorized changes the hackers were making." Now, okay, so file integrity monitoring is a thing and has been a thing since sometime since Tripwire first came on the market. And you may think that maybe there's a million other ways they could have solved this problem, and you'd be right. However, to back this up, Casey Ellis, the CEO and founder of BugCrowd, who's also much taller in person than he appears online, as I met him last weekend, is quoted stating that several bug bounty hunters identified similar flaws or the same flaws in other bug bounty programs sometime before the Equifax breach. It was no secret that the Struts vulnerability existed. Google's launched a new cloud security service in addition to funding and launching Chronicle, security firm who showcased at RSA this week. Google has made several other security plays, announcing the general availability of Cloud Armor, a DDoS defense and web application firewall service for the Google Cloud platform. Based on the same technology used to protect services such as Search, Gmail, and YouTube, Cloud Armor delivers Layer 3 and Layer 4 DDoS defense along with IP allow deny capabilities for applications or services behind the cloud HTTP/S load balancer. The release is accompanied by a new Cloud Armor dashboard in Stack Driver Monitoring to monitor and analyze traffic subject to Cloud Armor protection, while also making it easier for users to evaluate the potential impact of proposed rules on their whole project. Now, many believe Chronicle's new product Backstory, a new log monitoring and analysis tool, was the best new security technology showcased at RSA this year, and I agree. Unprotected MongoDB instances exposes 800 million emails. Attackers are quoted as saying jackpot. They really weren't. I just made that up because I thought it was funny. So an unprotected MongoDB database was recently found exposing 800 million records, including email addresses and phone numbers discovered on February 25th by security researcher Bob Diachenko. The MongoDB instance weighed in at 150 gigabytes and allowed anyone with an internet connection to access the information within. While most of the 800-something million records in the database for separate collections of data were email addresses, others were found to contain more details, including personally identifiable information. Google, again. This time, they're patching critical vulnerabilities, including a Bluetooth remote code execution. 11 critical Android bugs were patched in Google's March security updates. Three of them were tied to Android's media framework and core system. The media framework has been a very popular thing that they have to fix for security vulnerabilities. And others were related to faulty Qualcomm chip components. Out of those critical bugs, Google patched 3 critical remote code execution vulnerabilities, 2 in the media framework, and 1 in the Bluetooth subsystem as well. And with that, we'll take a short break and come back with expert commentary from Jason Wood. Today's determined attackers easily bypass even the most advanced network defenses. Trying to ramp up staff to detect their backdoors can cost thousands of dollars and take months, even years. With Active Countermeasures AI Hunter, we enable junior analysts to detect even the most advanced backdoors in a matter of hours. Sign up for a demo and purchase our product today by visiting activecountermeasures.com/PSW. Active Countermeasures. Make every analyst a hunter. And we're back. Do I have an announcement for this one too? I do. We've got a lot of announcements. The Security Weekly 2019 Security Weekly 25 Index Survey. Basically, there's 25 public companies that we're tracking in security. You can go to securityweekly.com, click the survey link. We'd like to understand who's using and evaluating those products from the companies in the Security Weekly 25. Those that wish to participate will be invited to a private webcast where we'll discuss the results. Secure World Boston is hosting their 15th annual conference March 27th through the 28th at the Heinz Convention Center. Security Weekly listeners can save $100 off a conference pass by visiting secureworldexpo.com and using the code SecurityWeekly. Mr. Jason Wood is here with us to talk about all things APT and Iranian people. What's going on, Jason?
Hey, Paul, not much. Just enjoying the APTs out there, I guess.
Yep, gotta love the APTs.
So yeah, one of the things I'm sure everybody has heard in the news is about the breach that Citrix has experienced. So they get to join an unfortunate list, I guess, in high-profile breaches. And there are lots of folks talking about this. And so I wanted to look at how we can use the information that has been published so far. Now, I want to start off with a disclaimer before I go any further. If anybody checks my background out, I'm actually a threat hunter at CrowdStrike, and I want to say that nothing I say here is the position of CrowdStrike or has anything to do with analysis done by my employer.
Good totally call. Good call. Always good to put the disclaimer out there.
Yeah, just because I'm talking about this, I wanted to toss that out. But with that out of the way, let's take a look at what's been released so far. For those of you who haven't heard or read much into this, 3 days ago, Citrix released a blog post saying that the FBI had contacted them and said that Citrix had experienced a data breach. Citrix admits that they do not know the entire scope of the breach at this point. They're going through their forensics and IR process, which is no surprise. So far, they've just said that the attackers had access to some documents out there. They don't know what all of those are. They further stated that the FBI advised them that the attackers probably use password spraying as a way of getting in. So no evidence from the analysis yet. That's just, you know, some an opinion of the FBI at this point from what they've seen. So you can cue up the speculation in that regards around password spraying and what will happen from that point. After that blog post, 2 days later, a security company tossed some fuel onto the fire. The company is called Reese Security out of Los Angeles, California, and they released a blog post saying that they had notified Citrix back on December 28th that they were part of a targeted attack and data breach, in quotes. Research stated that they further attributed the attack to a group named Iridium, who is described as an Iranian-backed team out there. And their analysis, ReSecurity's analysis, was that the attackers had access to 6 terabytes of data. So somebody who's off to the side here from this is their analysis on it. They released some indicators of compromise, IP addresses primarily, and some screenshots related to the breach. Now, I will admit I'm a little bit curious about the origins of the screenshots, because they actually include a screen capture of the global access or address list from Exchange for Citrix and a mapped drive to 6 terabytes of data on apparently a Citrix system. Regardless, this blog post has been picked up by the news, and now everybody is saying that Iranian attackers stole 6 terabytes of data and used password spraying to get in. So far from what I've read, the data doesn't really confirm any of this. The information from released by ReSecurity is fairly sparse at this point. Like I said, they've got some IP addresses they've listed out there and some screenshots. They do make comments about collaborating with other organizations, so I'm going to assume that they have other information that they just haven't publicly disclosed at this point. With all that out of the way, what are we supposed to do with this information? If you're in charge of defending your environment, what do you do with this? Like I said, the information we have isn't very detailed. The only specific stuff we have are the IOCs released by ReSecurity. And what they have are 3 source IP addresses and 7 proxy or VPN IP addresses that they have tied back to this breach. They also referenced an FBI flash alert that discusses the methods of an Iranian-based group named Mabna Institute. And in total, so we have 10 IP addresses and a technique to do some analysis on. So the first thing I would start looking at doing is go back to my security day if I wanted to see if maybe I could get some information based on this released out of my environment for this released bit of data. I'd go and do some analysis on those IP addresses. Do I see them anywhere in my logs? What were those events related to? What was trying to be accessed or done? Are these assets being used to interact with my organization in any way? Are they just hitting the public website? Am I seeing activity on, let's say, a VPN system? Anything like that. You know, you can start hunting on that data and then just start following that along to see what develops. This is something that I've done in the past, back when Mandiant released the APT1 report, and it yielded some interesting results as I looked at IP addresses that were in that information in the organization that I was working for. Second, you want to take a look at password spraying in your defenses. And one of the reasons, I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit in all of the podcasts here at Security Weekly, password spraying is highly effective. It works really well. And in spite of the spike in the number of authentication attempts you're going to see for a sustained period of time, organizations don't usually notice this. This is something I've used personally on penetration tests and gotten some pretty good mileage out of it. No one's account gets locked out, so nobody complains and nobody notices. So you want to start looking at your own environment. How would I detect this? Well, you know, what indicators could I pick up? Now, obviously, the biggest thing would be the sustained login activity of one authentication attempt, move on to the next account, and then rotate, you know, all through your entire organization, then work their way back through for the second attempt to try and avoid the lockout. You could look at multi-factor authentication also as an obvious defense. Those are some things you want to do. Hopefully that'd help you get a little bit of a hop on an attacker if they were using password spraying against you. And so those are just some starting points. I mean, when you see these types of releases, you know, these are questions I think it would be good to start asking yourself about your organization and what you're able to do with that. I've included several links in the show notes related to this bit of news. Go ahead and read it with a critical eye. I think it's useful, but you know, you want to have your critical thinking hat on and see what you can do as you do your own analysis of your defenses and your environment.
Yeah, I also feel like the password spraying is kind of a scapegoat, especially when we don't have all the details. They're like, oh, it was password spraying. And you're like, like you mentioned earlier, they didn't really present any evidence, they're holding back some, obviously, for obvious reasons. Yeah. So,
yeah, the password spraying was totally just the FBI saying, hey, we think this is it.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden everybody knows that it's it.
Right.
So I'm a little, like I said, read it with a skeptical eye.
Gotcha. Awesome, Jason. Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, for watching this edition or listening to this edition of Hack Naked News. See you next time.